Happy day after Labor Day, everybody. How are you? It's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio on September 8th, which is going to surprise you. Today is Tuesday, not Monday. Okay, I keep having to say that to myself a thousand times. I hope, considering COVID and all that stuff, and school starting and all the chaos and all that, I hope you had a good Labor Day weekend. And I know not every school starting. Some schools are starting late. Others have already been in session for a while. I hope your Labor Day was good. I guess we're all really back to work these days, and I wish you all well. I'll say, the real back-to-school time begins. And speaking of real back-to-school time, we'll have our newest issue of Equity and Access magazine up on site at ace-ed.org, our online journal for the American Consortium for Equity in Education, our industry-supported group, okay? And that will be up there at ace-ed.org probably the end of this week. We're making some final changes. We're a week ahead of schedule for our back-to-school issue, so we're thrilled about that. You're all welcome to join our American Consortium for Equity in Education at ace-ed.org. It's free to educators, all right? We want your voice heard. We want you to participate. We're doing some great things. We have wonderful things planned for the year, and we got a great show to start off what's really the beginning of the school year right now, although I know a lot of people have been back for a while, but Labor Day's kind of the traditional thing. This show today, we've got Matthew, and Matthew, I'll bring you on in a minute, but I hope I'm pronouncing your middle name right, Matthew Mugo Fields, who's the general manager of Supplemental and Interventional Solutions at Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, HMH, okay, who's been there since 2017. We're going to talk about their Educator Confidence Report, which is fairly new, and I'm telling you, it is absolutely fascinating how teachers are looking at the profession, how teachers are looking at education, etc. It's really a fabulous piece of work, and Matthew's going to get into all the details with us. We're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org. That's where we put up a new schedule every Saturday, and we've got our schedule up there for this week, and it's a good one, starting with this show. Please go over there. We tweet over at EduTalk Radio. Facebook is Education Talk Radio, or my name, Larry Jacobs. And LinkedIn is Larry Jacobs. You can connect with us in all those sorts of ways. And again, the new issue of Equity and Access, which is always causes a flood to the website, okay, is available to you. We'll keep announcing it probably later this week, but please join our consortium at ace-ed.org, the American Consortium for Equity in Education. And on that note, the first question is, Matthew, it's Larry, and did I pronounce your middle name right?
Hey, Larry, great to be with you this morning. And yes, you absolutely pronounced it 100% correct. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Matthew. I'm going to do it again, Matthew Mugo Fields. I appreciate it, my friend. How are you today, Matthew? How was your Labor Day?
It was good. Probably like you and a lot of educators out there, it was too short, but it was good, and it's now time to get back into the cycle of work.
Yeah, we've been talking about it all this time. Now it's time to really start doing it. And I got to make the point that everybody has been doing it. We've been trying in this craziest of school years and school returns, but we're going to make it happen. I mentioned that you were the general manager of Supplemental and Intervention Solutions. I love that, at Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, HMH. Okay, can you tell everybody what that means? What's your job on a regular basis?
Yeah, so my job is to lead our what we call Supplemental Intervention Solutions. So think of that as the primary sort of instructional solutions or curriculum areas outside of sort of core curriculum. Heavy use of educational technology, advanced technology such as AI, machine learning, et cetera. A lot of those solutions are the things that we work on and develop in my group.
Right, and I know we're going to talk about this in a little while, but since it's Supplemental and Interventional Solutions, would you also be in charge of any social-emotional learning products, that kind of thing?
Yes, indeed. In fact, sort of our approach at HMH is to tackle this important issue of emotional learning from a couple of different fronts. So you can think of it as we seek to embed SEL, social-emotional learning components, in all of our sort of academic programs.
Cool.
We know that, you know, as many educators will tell you, relationships and social emotional learning needs of students is a precondition for academic learning. So we try not to sort of decouple them, but we sort of embed them, whether it be issues of motivation, whether it be creating room in our programs for teachers to have time to have sort of mindful relationship building with students. So we do that, but we also have some dedicated social emotional programs. In fact,
I know
it's not in my group, but we just recently released a curriculum around A Chance in the World, which is a fabulous autobiography by Steve Pemberton that chronicles sort of his journey, having been a foster child and come up through that system and all of the tumultuous things he dealt with. And that is now part of our core curriculum program. So we kind of tackle it both ways, embedded and, yes, embedded social-emotional programs as well.
Good enough. HMH, everybody, Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. And Matthew is again, Supplemental and Intervention Solutions General Manager. What were you doing before that? Were you an educator? Were you a teacher?
Yeah. So I way back got my start.
Can't be that long. Come on.
So I started as really more initially on a volunteer basis as a tutor for kids when I was in college, tutoring some students. I attended Morehouse College and, had some pretty potent interventions by educators in my life that sort of made my academic journey possible. And so I always had this strong urge to give back. So I started tutoring kids in my dorm room. That led me to create some tutoring programs with the Atlanta Public Schools, and I would teach a math class one day a week kind of stuff. And that's really got my energy flowing in terms of wanting to become, on the business side of education to support teachers.
Yeah.
Work with on a daily basis. So I became an education entrepreneur and spent most of my career doing that, both in terms of technology and in terms of tutoring. And then that led me to my current role at HMH, where we're focused on trying to provide personalized learning experiences for students.
You guys do a good job.
A lot of times. Yeah. Thank you for that. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say you do, and we are in agreement on that. HMH does nice work out there. Okay, I got to tell you. And part of that nice work, I'll segue right into this, is this fabulous report, the Educator Confidence Report, okay, which we've done before, but this year is nuttier than ever, if I may. The key finding, we're going to find out in a minute, okay, like the Academy Awards in the wake of the COVID-19 and all that. I've been through it. And let me just get everybody, hold on, I can find it right here. It's, I have it, hold on one second, I downloaded it, darn it, so I don't have it. What's the exact, HMH, let me help everybody. I just Googled, okay, Educator 2020 Educator Confidence Report, and it came right up. Do you have the website for it, Matthew?
Yeah, you can access it from our website, from our homepage at hmhco.com. hmhco.com, you can find it on our homepage.
Great.
It's prominently featured there. So, it's our annual independent study. Yeah.
It's good stuff. I hope everybody's looking from Betsy DeVos on down about what this thing means, etc. I mean, it's really, really important stuff. And again, I just Googled Educator Confidence Report 2020. So, what, Matthew, you're their spokesman for all this, okay? You've been doing it for a number of years. What's the key finding this year in the wake of COVID? Remember, everybody, they were asking teachers. So go ahead.
Yeah, so do you need to provide a little bit of background and then I'll get into
the key finding. Oh, please,
you don't know.
Enjoy yourself. Yeah, you are.
The Educator Conference Report is our annual independent study. It's really like a barometer for how educators on the front line, both administrators and teachers, are feeling about the profession. And obviously this is a critical time, a time like no other, right? So arguably no more important time to do this than now. And so for us, we go out and we survey, we work with YouGov, and we talk to about 1,400, 1,500 educators across the country, diverse groups, urban, rural, et cetera. And we seek to analyze all that data and come up with some key findings. This year, perhaps the biggest finding is, despite all the challenges that COVID-19 has presented, 75% of teachers say they feel prepared to confront those challenges for back to school.
And that's huge,
right? And I think that's really a testament and a statement about the resiliency of teachers.
Yep.
And how they've met these unprecedented challenges that we're focused on.
Yeah, it's really so important. And what can I say? I've been saying this since March. Everybody fell off the cliff, okay, on November 13th, okay? And most of us, 75% of us, so it says, and I bet even more, have climbed back up. Okay, and we're doing the very best we can. Nothing's perfect out there. We know that, but it's really, really important. And resiliency, and I did notice on here that I was concerned when I read through the report that a number of people, Matthew, a number of teachers aren't going to stay in the profession very long. Okay, and it balanced those two things that you just said. I'm very concerned about this.
Yeah, it is a concern that folks are you know out there saying you know within 10 years they're not going to be in the profession. I to put a bit of a silver lining on that one, in
please do
on that finding, teachers who said they were going to stay in the profession was up 10 percentage points from a year ago. So we've actually seen an increase.
That.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's up over a year ago. And we think there are many factors in that. One of them, also a key finding of the report, is many teachers are saying that, you know, they anticipate that the profession is going to be viewed much higher, viewed with more prestige. And we know that a lot of that has to do with, you know, quite frankly, parents having to fully encounter what teachers actually deal with, right? So
every day,
so they
right.
actually feel more appreciated than before.
Right. What was the standing joke back in April? Was that all of a sudden the parents are going to learn that maybe it's not the teacher that's the problem?
Exactly.
Right. They're all going to learn that, and the teachers are, and it's a challenging. But that is really good, and that's really a wonderful, wonderful thing to come out of this. Okay, and uplifting of the profession itself, and that's what the profession needs is a great uplifting, as far as I'm concerned, because they are disrespected too often. Okay, and
yeah,
they really
I,
came
I would
through.
Agree.
And I'm gonna, I keep saying this, when everything shut down because of this pandemic, education did not shut down. The schools may have closed. Okay, but education did not shut down. We made it work, and we made it happen. Okay, it's unbelievable. What do you find, okay, about preparing for this school year in terms of teachers? What are they looking for? What do they need? What are their concerns?
Yeah, I think what's really interesting is, and this goes to exactly to the point you were just making, is, you know, not only, again, 75% say they're prepared, but that's way, way up from, you know, back in the spring, only one in five, 17%
yeah.
of teachers said that their school was distance learning in the spring. So what we found is that teachers are not only are they resilient, but 98% of them consider themselves lifelong learners, right? Which is absolutely critically important. School systems all over the country kind of got knocked down by these challenges in the spring, and folks really locked in on, okay, I'm gonna work on this distance learning thing. I'm gonna get good at this. I'm gonna use my time over the summer. I'm gonna get acquainted with this technology, et cetera. And a lot of people did that, and that's why we believe they feel so much more confident. That doesn't mean the challenges have gone away. That doesn't mean that they
challenges
you know,
will
they,
never go
saying
away.
They, yeah,
the challenges
saying,
will never go
I have,
away.
I,
yeah. Yep.
Exactly. They're not saying I have mastered this. I'm ultimately proficient in distance learning, but they feel a lot more prepared than they did a few short months ago, and that's just truly, truly impressive and real testament to that lifelong learning commitment that teachers have.
Boy, it really is. It improves what can go on. It's amazing. And you know, I wanted to swing over to this for a second, and that's education technology, which is part of your group, EdTech. Okay. the world has the teaching world, I don't know how long it's going to continue, and I'll say it this way, has become less personalized, okay, because of the COVID problem and remote learning and all that sort of thing. Okay, teachers are very touchy-feely people. Okay, and they really do relate to their students, and it's important to see in a child's face, and also vice versa for the student to see the brightness in the teacher's face when they see that learning has occurred and all that. Okay, EdTech has been around, and you and I, we all go to the ISTE conference and all that sort of thing. Okay, when there was an ISTE conference, all right, there'll be the wee one, we hope, later in the year. But my point is, with EdTech, all right, describe. And you can feel free to plug and how we always talk about how the teachers are resilient and all that, but the industry had to be resilient too, okay? So when HMH looked at the education challenges right now, okay, how did they step up, okay, in terms of ed tech and making it easier for teachers and all that? You should be able to answer that question beautifully, my friend. Don't worry.
Thank you for the setup.
Yeah, feel free to plug some stuff. This is important.
It is important. I would summarize it this way. EdTech is in a grow-up moment. For many years, a lot of the EdTech solutions were sort of, you know, viewed as companions to print, in some cases, a nice to have, right? Provided some elements of personalization, allowed teachers to have students be engaged. Maybe they provided some cool graphics, et cetera. Maybe it provided an opportunity for students to get some individualized practice. But what we're learning and what we know is that is not enough any longer. And so for us, the way we approached it at HMH is we knew that one of the biggest pain points teachers told us that they were having with all this ed tech is there were just too many apps. There were too many applications. They were disconnected from each other. You got to log in over here for this one. You got to log in over here for this other one. By the way, all those things have nothing to do with your other materials and your print materials that you're using in your classroom. So for us at HMH, what we've chosen to do is really put a priority on what we call connecting our solution. So we just launched a new solution, HMH Anywhere, which is essentially all your curriculum, all your core curriculum, your individualized practice, your assessment curriculum on a single platform that you can use for remote teaching. If you're in that environment, you can use it in the classroom, and it'll work in conjunction with the books and with the print materials, or you can use it in a hybrid model. So for us, we said, you know, connection has to happen between all these different solutions, and we've sought to create a single platform where that happens. HMH Anywhere was just released. We kind of accelerated it, actually,
in response
to COVID. Yeah, because the other thing that we chose to do, which, let's face it, like a year and a half ago wasn't a priority, it became a priority instantly, was integrating with the major video conferencing tools, so Zoom, Google Meet, Microsoft Teams, because that's what a lot of teachers are using to meet with their classes, and so we thought it was important. If we're going to say connection is important, we should be connected to those tools as well.
Right. And where do you see this going? And this is your responsibility over there, your general manager. Where do you see this going, okay, as the year progresses? Of course, none of us know where the year is going to go, okay? But let's all hope the kids can eventually get back to school, okay? It's an adoption of technology, all right? And how do you see classrooms changing? And I don't know if the survey took care of this. How does the classrooms change, okay, as we learn from this moment?
Yeah, I think one of the things the survey touched on that gets at this question is over, I think it was 74% of educators believe that technology will forever change the classroom. That this year that we're all going through there will be a new normal. There will not be the old normal. And so we believe heartily. I think this year is going to be a year of tremendous learning for educators as they wrestle with these challenges, as they figure out new systems and ways to prepare and provide instruction. There's going to be a ton of learning for us, the providers, who seek to partner with these educators to help them generate results. We're learning all the time. We're making enhancements to our solutions, deepening those connections, developing new tools. For example, we just released an AI that listens to students read and assesses their reading and then tutors them based on, it's called Amira. It connects into that platform I was telling you before and shares the data with our core curriculum program. So those kinds of tools you're going to see more and more. You're going to see more advanced technology in classrooms, and you're going to see teachers become real experts in not only using these tools, but being discerning selectors of these tools. They're going to quickly, many of them are already here, but many more of them will tell you, and they will share with each other which ones work, which ones don't, which ones are worth your time investing in, et cetera.
Right. It's really fascinating. And there is going to be, and I hate to say this, but I guess I'm glad to say it, there is going to be good coming out of this pandemic. Okay, it's a horrible event. 200,000 people almost have died. Okay, so many kids are sick. Everything's disrupted. That's all bad. But there's going to be good stuff that we're going to learn, and hopefully for the future, those things are going to make a real difference. And on that note, okay, Matthew, let me ask you about the word that is so important to us. As I mentioned, I don't know if you heard at the beginning of the show, but we run the American Consortium for Equity in Education. That's over at our website, ace-ed.org. That's an industry-supported group, and we are very concerned, okay, about equity, okay, and learning for all students. And I know your background. Okay, we have that same interest in there. We want all students to have the same and the high-quality education. What did this survey tell us about equity, which, by the way, is everybody's favorite buzzword these days, and we're doing everything we can to make it a hell of a lot more than a buzzword. Okay, so go for it.
I'm right there with you.
I know you are.
It is absolutely deep for me. I mean, the whole reason that I entered the education profession is to attempt to do for many more students what was done for me. I was a poor black kid, immigrant kid, Title I, free lunch kid, and had some educators step into my life and say at an early age, this kid is going to college. And so they were the same people who not only helped me get into college, but helped me pay for college. And then turned around and looked at me the day before I left for school and said, now you got to go do this for other kids. So this issue runs very deeply for me. I think there's no higher aim than, we talk about innovation, we talk about technologies, there's no higher aim than advancing the issues of equity. And the survey, to your point, the survey definitely touched on this. This was an area where you saw a clear distinction in the survey between, educators from higher poverty schools and versus lower poverty schools. So in those higher poverty schools, devices and connectivity for students remain a top concern. Over 88% of educators said that was a remaining concern for them, and that kind of makes sense. And we know that there's lots of great work being done around the country, school systems that are providing devices to students and to families. But once you even get those devices in the hands of students, connectivity and then usage. Having skilled usage of the devices remains a challenge as well. So we saw those concerns there, and we obviously, this is not only a personal passion. This is not just something that illuminates and essential to the work we do at HMH, but I'm one of the co-founders of an organization called Innovation for Equity, which seeks to help address these issues in ways similar to what you're talking about.
Wow, we'll have to get together on that. I didn't know that.
Yes.
Innovation. Yes, go ahead, please.
Innovation for Equity. You can find it at innovationequity.org. We're a group of industry, education industry leaders who got together with superintendents, college presidents. So we've tried to be really cross sector and interdisciplinary in our approach to defining solutions for issues of equity in the space, including providing more opportunity for diverse leadership in the space, right? Because we know that that's an area as well. Yeah, you know, it's not just equity isn't just about the students, but it's also about diversifying the workforce, diversifying leadership, et cetera. So, yeah.
Of course it is. And congratulations on your group, innovationequity.org. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I have
very
your phone number. Yeah, I'm going to call you because we should actually be working together on this rather than separately.
I agree.
You know, we're all in the same boat, and I would love to talk to you further about that. So I'm going to call you and talk to you. That's wonderful. Okay, I'm so glad to hear that more and more people are working towards equity like we are. It's just great. Okay, and please go over and visit our site at ace-ed.org, and you'll learn what we do. Okay, promise me you'll do that. You have to do that.
I definitely will do that.
Okay. And I have to ask you this, and this is a key problem, okay? We know that ed tech, we said this a few minutes ago, is becoming a much, much more important thing. We've known that for years, but now it's even more so. Then we have the conversation about connectivity, accessibility, all that sort of thing in the ed tech world, in the high poverty areas, the rural areas, however you want to phrase that. Okay, put those two things together, Matthew. What can we do about that? What are teachers looking for? Okay, maybe the high poverty, the teachers in these schools. What are they looking for? What do they need?
Yeah, I think it breaks down into a couple of different categories. So first and foremost, I think there's general consensus and agreement. We've got to get students connected. We used to talk about the digital divide. We used to talk about it like a homework gap, we used to call it. Now, because access to the internet and a device is an essential learning element for students, we've got to solve that problem. We've talked about it in the past as we need a sort of a new deal for education, right, where we can address that issue once and for all and make sure that students are able to connect to the internet, and that's absolutely critical. We think that having these solutions connected, again, as I talked about earlier with solutions like HMH Anywhere, that's going to make them easier to use, even for students who are first-time users, even for teachers who may not be, you know, they don't want to get a degree in computer science, and nor should they have to have one in order to use a suite of education technology programs effectively together, right? So we've got to do a better job really at connecting these solutions, and quite frankly, that's a lot of the work that the industry needs to do. We've got to make sure that our solutions are more interoperable, they're deeply connected, their data passes more freely, and we've got to do that to make this more effective so we can get the benefits of technology. And then lastly, and we think of this as, you know, connected relationships, right? This gets at the point earlier around SEL. We know there's nothing more important in education than the relationship between a teacher and students. We know mm-hmm. that. So we've got to make sure that even as we're pursuing usage of technology, addressing issues of devices, doing fancy AI-driven curriculum, et cetera, that we never lose sight of the fact that that relationship between that teacher and her class of students is the most important thing that will guarantee that mm-hmm. the conditions for achievement exist. And so we've got to zero in on that and provide as many opportunities for relationship building as we possibly can.
Yeah, we really, really do. You guys are on top of this, and you certainly, sir, are on top of it more so than anything. You know, I'm looking at the survey as we're talking here, and this is interesting to me. It says, and we all agree, ed tech, obviously these days, is the way of the future. Okay, that doesn't take away, like you just said, from the teacher-student relationship. It never should. Okay, but it does imply changes in pedagogy, et cetera. Okay, so there's a section here, teachers face barriers to effective ed tech integration. And 51%, that's basically half, say there's a lack of time to plan for integration of digital resources into instruction. Okay, which it is amazing considering what we're doing these days. Do you think that's going to change in the future? What's your feeling on that? We have, I know that some of the school districts, I think Boston as an example, isn't even starting until September 8th, okay, and giving teachers 2 weeks of absolute time to just start learning all this stuff. What do you think's going on out there with in terms of that? Are we going to do a lot more in this? I think we have to. You know, we have to give people more time. That simple.
Yeah, I do. I think we do need to acknowledge that preparing to use digital tools and distance learning does require its own preparation, and so we need to be thoughtful about that for sure. So absolutely, teachers need time to prepare. There are some encouraging signs with teachers feeling more comfortable using these digital tools. Look, some teachers, maybe even those who were, we'll call them digital skeptics,
earlier. Digital skeptic anymore.
I talked to the superintendent a little while ago who said, they got thrown in the deep end of the pool.
Yeah,
and guess what? Many of those teachers now know how to swim though. So they're swimming. And they're being more effective than even they may have thought they would be.
That's right. That's right. When you're forced to do it, you rise to the occasion. These are professionals. It'd be like going into a doctor's office and they never heard of an MRI. Well, can I just feel around in there? No, you gotta move with the technology. And the school districts, and it's incumbent upon them to give teachers the time and the professional development. And I might add, it's incumbent, and you know certainly know this, on the companies as well, like HMH, to provide great professional learning and great work after you sell the product into the school district. You guys work hard to make sure everybody knows what they're doing, right?
Absolutely. We've integrated into the platform I told you about a new product called Teacher's Corner, which is our online professional learning application for teachers, which not only helps them, use our products effectively, but also addresses these issues of key priorities around digital learning. How do you build relationships with students effectively in a digital context? How do you give yourself and prepare adequately for different skills? What are the best applications to use as you're trying to teach different things? All of that kind of, learning how to use these tools and incorporate them into your craft is absolutely critical.
Absolutely. And, and I have to say, every doctor's office these days, they now have, in my doctor, in our system, it's called MyChart. That's the way we relate to our doctors. Okay, we post our questions online and it goes privately to them. They come back, but it's a very personal response to what I need.
And this is
the way things are going to change, okay, as things go on. And by the way, I'm going to get back to something. I have two more things to ask you. First of all, I just want to get back to one thing. Social-emotional learning is the number one thing in the HMH report on educator confidence. Okay, social emotional learning. I want to make the point when Matthew said before that's embedded. Am I right, Matthew? In what everything you're putting out there, that's key.
It's absolutely key. It's embedded. It's what teachers tell us we must have.
Yeah.
It is their primary concern. It continues to grow, as you can imagine. You have a bunch of, your students going through a global pandemic. It's weird, right? We're almost getting a little used to this state we're in. This is not normal. This is not normal for highly educated adults like us, let alone for children. So making sure that we are creating the space for supporting students socially and emotionally, helping them develop and regulating their emotions. It's so key. But I'll add one other sort of new thing to the social-emotional discussion, and that's social-emotional learning for teachers themselves. I mean, they're living through unprecedented times.
Absolutely.
And so we've got to create space for teachers themselves to address their own social-emotional learning. We talked a minute ago about professional learning. Well, one of the benefits of, online professional learning, at least the way we do it, is the building of community among teachers them helping each other, is absolutely important. We can't lose sight of the fact that this is a really challenging time, even though we have the great privilege of working with teachers and adults who have embraced these challenges, who are rising to the occasion. But it's still challenging.
It really is. And lastly, and I will call you later, I want to follow up on all the equity stuff you were talking about a minute ago, but what's the favorite thing you learned out of the report, the Educator Confidence Report this year? Your favorite thing, Matthew Mugo Fields?
I think it's, in a way, it's a repeat of what I've said, I guess, throughout this, our time together, is that educators, teachers in particular, are extremely resilient, are extremely committed to their profession, to their students. You've got teachers all over the country who, despite the challenges that are clear, couldn't wait for this day. For many, this is back to school day, right?
Yeah.
Couldn't wait to get back to their students. And that came through. They're so committed, in fact, to their students and to this process of teaching and learning that they have done a lot of the work that it takes to get really good at navigating these challenging times. And so that, to me, not only it wasn't surprising, but it was affirming. And I'm just so honored I'm so honored to be in a position to do the work that we do at HMH with teachers.
Right. And you're doing a hell of a good job, I got to tell you, my friend, and we'll get to know each other a little bit better. Okay. This is just great. Everybody, thank you, Matthew. This is incredible. I'll tell everybody where to go and all this sort of stuff to find the report, et cetera. Keep up the good work, my friend. Are you down in Atlanta now? But where are you now? Okay. Everybody's remote
these
days.
Everybody's remote. Kind of doesn't matter, right? I'm in Boston these days. So HMH
is
headquartered in Boston.
Oh, because I'm up here in Maine.
Oh yeah. Well. When physical getting together is a thing again, we'll do that.
We'll absolutely do it. Yeah, my wife works in Boston at WGBH. So there you go.
Fantastic.
I didn't know you were in Boston. That's really cool. It's good to know. Okay, and I hope. Let me just make this point. I hope you're watching the Celtics these days. I am. Good man.
They've almost got me.
They got it this year. So we'll see what happens. Matt, we'll talk a little bit later today, okay?
Great.
And thank you.
Take care. Larry.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
This was just wonderful. Thanks. Bye-bye. Everybody, that was Matthew Mugo Fields. Matthew's the general manager. This is great stuff. Of Supplemental and Intervention Solutions at HMH, Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. Okay, I'm going to give you the simple thing. Google the 2020 Educator Confidence Report. Okay, and boom, it'll pop right up, and it's at HMHCO.com, like Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. Okay, and it's got great information. It's going to make you feel really good about education and the teaching profession and all that. It has some really solid points in there. So do it over there. And please go over our industry-supported coalition. The American Consortium for Equity in Education is available to every educator at no charge, thanks to the industry, over at ace-ed.org. Please go over and check that out. We're going to archive this show at education-talkradio.org. Thank you, Matthew Mugo Fields. It's good to have a new friend down in Boston, too. We will get together when all this stuff gets – we get rid of this COVID thing. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening. And have a good week.